Vashti. Her name means beautiful woman. Ah, and she was. She was the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. It's been many years since she lost her crown, and I may be the only one left, the only one who was there, the only one who knows the story firsthand. The king, King Ahasuerus, was a very powerful man. He ruled over 127 provinces, from India to Ethiopia. And he was a very proud man, and he loved to display his wealth. He decided to have a banquet and invite all the powerful men from the kingdom. He invited the governors of Persia and Media. He invited all of the nobles and the administrators of those 127 provinces. All the important men came to the palace for this banquet, but it was no ordinary banquet. No. This banquet was to last 180 days, an entire half year. And it did. But as that banquet drew to a close, the king decided that had not been enough. No, he extended the party. For an entire week after that, for 7 days, he held a drinking party, and he added to the guest list. He added all of the men from the capital city, and he moved the festivities out into the courtyard, which he had adorned with all manner of opulence. There were linen tapestries. The floor was a mosaic of mother of pearl and marble and emeralds. He had gold and silver couches. There on display were miniature cups, each one encrusted with over 30,000 talents worth of rubies. Well, during this time, while the banquet was occurring, the women of the palace stayed far away. But when the king threw his drinking party, at which the wine flowed freely in gold and silver cups, the queen, Queen Vashti, decided to host a party of her own. And all the women of the palace were invited. We were all there. It was so good to sit together, to sip wine, to talk. And on the 7th day of the drinking party of the king, he sent his 7 eunuchs to fetch Vashti. They said the king had commanded her to return to the courtyard with them, wearing her royal diadem. The word "only" was strongly implied. We all knew exactly what the king expected. He expected his queen, he expected Vashti, to return with the eunuchs wearing nothing but her royal crown, to stand in front of that courtyard filled with men who had been drinking for days on end, to stand there, be on display as one of the king's possessions. No one spoke. I held my breath. I blinked back tears. The woman next to me grabbed my hand as tears rolled down her cheeks. In my mind, I could see exactly what might befall Vashti if she did as the king commanded. What could happen to her? The only woman in a courtyard filled with all of those men, those drunken men, standing there on display. Then Vashti stood from the couch that she'd been sitting on. She stood there, and she looked around the room at all the women gathered there. And then she spoke. No. The eunuch stood there trying to comprehend what she just said. Tell him, no. The eunuchs finally nodded and backed out of the room. When they had gone, Vashti again gazed around the room, this time meeting the eyes of each and every woman gathered there. And when she was done, she turned and she slipped into her private chamber. I later learned what happened in that courtyard after the eunuchs delivered Vashti's no. The king was irate. When his pride was wounded, he was embarrassed at being disobeyed in front of all the most important men in the realm. He consulted his advisors, the men who were well-versed in the law. He talked to the governors of Persia and Media, and one of them spoke, Memucan. He said, Your Majesty, Vashti has not only insulted you, she has insulted every man in the realm. And when word spreads, when the women hear what she has done, and they will hear, all of the women will begin to dishonor their husbands. They will begin to disobey. We cannot have this. And all the men agreed, and the king sent out a royal decree that day, a decree that was fixed in the laws of the land so that it was irreversible, a decree that was translated into every language across those 127 provinces, a decree that said all women, rich or poor, high born or low, must now and forever obey their husbands. And Memucan suggested a second decree be sent out that day, that Queen Vashti never be allowed in the king's presence again, that her crown be taken away and given to a woman better than she. And the king, in his anger, agreed. We all know that anger abates, as it did with the king. I like to think that perhaps he began to think of Vashti again more kindly, that he regretted what he had done. And perhaps that's correct, because the men of the palace soon approached the king in order to turn his thoughts away from Vashti. They had a plan. The plan was to search out throughout the kingdom, to find all of the most beautiful young virgins, bring them to the palace, and allow the king to search among them, to decide which one pleased him most. And then she would be given Vashti's crown. Well, the king was delighted with this idea, and the contest began. But you might be wondering what happened in that room where I was with all those women that day, and what happened to Vashti. At least I hope that's what you're wondering now. After Vashti left us in that room, we sat there for a long time thinking about what had just happened. We began talking about her bravery, her courage. We knew that she had risked everything, her position, perhaps even her life, by saying no, by valuing herself, by valuing her integrity over obeying the word of the king. And we were inspired by that. So we began to tell each other our own stories, and the stories of our mothers and our sisters, of times when we had been mistreated or abused or told to obey, even when we knew it was wrong, it was the wrong thing to do, and that we could lose ourselves in doing so. We talked late into that night, and we continued
to tell those stories, the stories of Vashti, the stories of ourselves. We had to do it quietly. We had to do it in secrecy, behind closed doors, but we still told those stories. I'm sorry to say, I never saw Vashti again after she left us that day. Some say that she lost her head in addition to her crown. Others say she was taken into the desert and left there to die. I like to believe that she slipped out of the palace that day. And she went into the wider world. And she was helped by women secretly. By women who had heard her story and were inspired by it. You know that our stories die if we don't tell them. So will you help keep Vashti's story alive? Will you tell her story? And will you tell your own stories? And the stories of other women and of other men who have said no when no was the right thing to say.
Has anybody ever heard Queen Vashti's story preached before? It is the first chapter of the book of Esther, and I encourage you to look at it. Actually, Deborah, almost every single line from Scripture was in her performance today, and she interpreted some of it, but it's very true to the story that we have. The only story in the book of Esther that makes it into the three-year lectionary cycle from which we preach is Esther's story, and that just once. The book of Esther is kind of a problem and has been a problem for years in Jewish circles as well as Christian circles. First of all, it has two strong women proponents. It's the only book in the Bible that does. These two strong women and their actions are a great threat to the status quo. And Esther, which is the story that we remember, is able to avoid the genocide of her people by her being queen. Strategies of two different women, very different circumstances. One who cannot say yes one more time, who must stand up and say no, even if it costs her her life. And the other one who enters power through a beauty contest, through the gathering of young virgin women who had no marks on their bodies, and she won the beauty contest, and she kept her Jewishness a secret. Because it was a time when the Jews were in exile after the Persian invasion. And living in Persia, they had to live undercover, and they assimilated in many ways. In fact, in so many ways that the book of Esther is hardly Jewish. There's nothing about Jewish law or Jewish custom. God isn't even mentioned in the book of Esther. It's just about two women. So what? So it doesn't make it into the lectionary, and the story of Vashti doesn't make it into the lectionary. And there are a number of stories of violence against women in the Bible that don't make it in the lectionary, or if they do, we rush past it to get to a more pleasant, appealing, less aggravating story. But I thought, considering the situation in the world today and the escalating violence against women and girls and small children, that it was important to tell the stories today. Because as long as the church is silent about the stories we have in our faith tradition and doesn't speak out about these texts of terror, then we are complicit with the violence against women that continues today. The omissions in the book of Esther bothered the ancient writers so much that they added 107 more verses to make it, more pliable. Take the focus off of those two women and put the focus a little bit more where it should be, on God. It's in the Apocrypha. That's where you can find it, but the Roman Catholic Church, it's part of the actual book of Esther. The additions are full of prayer and God talk, and they make the story of Esther seem more religiously appropriate. I remember when I was leading a women's retreat in Mexico with the part of the 10,000 Mayan women that made up the diocesan women's group there. And we were studying the book of Esther, and it was in a very rural community. And I had been teaching about the book of Esther all day, and we'd been doing some different exercises with our bodies, and the women were just amazed that there was a book in the Bible that they'd never heard of before. The priest had never mentioned anything about it. And when I went to bed that night and got up in the middle of the night, because you know we had beans for breakfast, beans for lunch, and beans for dinner, and I got up a few times, there would be a line of women, one sitting and one little light bulb, and the woman would open the Bible to the book of Esther and put her hand on it and pat it and close the book of close the Bible and hand it to the next woman. And she would sit down, open the book, find the book of Esther, pat it, close it, pass it on, just to know that a woman's name appeared on a book of the Bible was an act of resistance for the women. Because these women had never even heard their name, many of them. They'd been called woman or worse. And at the end of our retreat, we had a ritual where we had a bowl of water and we had little flowers, white flowers, and the women I invited to come up and say their name and their mother's name and their mother's name as far back as they could remember. But the problem was most of them didn't know the names. So we started making names up, but the names that they knew they would say, and they were very timid in the beginning. They would say their name very timidly, and I would say, "Speak up, the world needs to hear your name." And by the end of the ritual, they were yelling their name and putting those flowers in the water, and everybody was clapping to hear all of these women's names. It was a gathering of all the women and their stories into that place. And at the end, I invited the women to come up and bless themselves with the water, and I thought they'd come up, you know, and do a little blessing, but they were like splashing it on them and really bathing in this water that had the names, their mother's names, their mother's mother's names, all women who had been forced to live with domestic violence. And one woman came up to me afterwards and said, "My daughter is beaten up by her husband every day, and I'm afraid she's going to die." And I went to the priest, and the priest said that I just wasn't praying hard enough. And I said, "Do you own a frying pan?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, beat on it. You know, beat on it when you hear that happening." And so all the women in the community started beating on their pans when they heard one woman being beaten up. And the men were afraid because all the women would descend on them with their frying pans, beating on the frying pans, and they were afraid that they were going to get... And the violence against women de-escalated. We have this powerful story of Queen Vashti that needs to be heard, and it resounded in the women's lives, and they took it home with the story of Esther, and their lives were different because of it. This is a tale of survival in the face of overwhelming power for both Queen Vashti and Queen Esther, because both women are locked in a life and death struggle not of her own making. Deborah set the scene really beautifully, this opulent, I mean, come on, 180 days, and the guys had been drinking all of that time. It would be kind of a scary party to go to, but then they had the party of all parties, the in-your-face party, where Ahasuerus wanted to show all of his minions his wealth, which surely had been pillaged from their countries, their provinces, which he had taken over. And the final thing was to show his most treasured possession, which was his queen in her crown, and only her crown. The text tells us that the rubies were worth, and the cups that were embedded in the cups that they drank their wine in were worth 30,000 talents. One talent is worth $660,000 today. We are talking about an eat your hearts out party. This wasn't a party to have great fun. This was a show of power and wealth. And so surely Vashti knew when she was called to appear before the men that she could lose her body and possibly her life, that there was no protection for her. Maybe she had done what she was told to do at some earlier times, and she had been abused. Maybe she simply couldn't say yes again. So she risked everything, and as Deborah said, every woman in the room knew of that experience. Have you ever known that place where you've endured something that has eaten away at your mind and body and spirit for so long that you got to the point where you couldn't participate anymore. You were willing to risk everything and perhaps even your life when the last thing you had left was your sense of personal integrity and rightness and wholeness, and you said, no, no more, no way, never again. Sometimes it's in our workplace, sometimes it's in our relationship, sometimes it's in our families, sometimes it's on a public bus. I remember a friend, and she was sitting in the back, and a guy got on and was just berating a Mexican-American woman, calling her all kinds of horrible names. And my friend, who's never said a curse word in her life, jumped up and said, shut the you-know-what up. And he did, saying no to the abuse of power. Queen Vashti must have been at that breaking point in which even death was preferable to appearing as the nude trophy queen in front of all the king's drunken men. Ahasuerus and his advisors were afraid. They were certain that word would get out. And word does get out, doesn't it? That's the grapevine. When stuff like that happens, no matter how the powers that be crack down, word gets out. And that very day, in the provinces, the women began to talk about what Vashti had done. And even though there was a new law that said that women had to obey their husbands, there was this resounding memory of Vashti's no. And Esther never would have become queen if she had said yes. And Esther never would have had the opportunity to save her people from genocide if Vashti hadn't first said no. All those little pieces in our life where one of us says no and the next one picks up and goes on, where Esther, who could endure a beauty contest, who could stay in a system that was broken and use it to her advantage to save her people, but Vashti couldn't, all of those different people's no and yes and no and yes, the word gets out. There are so many texts of terror in our scripture that are not heard. When we are silent as church about these stories, we are complicit in the violence against women. And I can tell you that 1 out of 3 women in the world has experienced sexual violence. Look around. 1 out of 3 women in this room have experienced sexual violence. And I'm telling you, this church is amazing, and we have incredible men, but we are all human beings, and we can all be abusive, male and female alike. There's elder abuse, there's child abuse, there's violence against women. This is a story of the abuse of power and a woman standing up and saying no, but it's all of our story. It's a story for all of us to be encouraged to say no. There's a story in scripture from the book of Judges about the Levite's concubine. And it's a very typical story of violence against women that shows that cycle of violence, which Deborah also talked about how King Ahasuerus probably was apologetic after a while and would want Vashti back. That's the way it works. And then the violence escalates again. In the Levite's concubine, the Levite priest has a concubine and she flees from him, and concubine only flees a place that she's going to have food and protection if there's something really wrong. She goes to her family. Her family feeds her and protects her. The Levite finds her, and the family does what families so often do. They took him in and fed him and tried to get him to stay with them for a while their daughter recovered. And finally, because of the customs of the land, they had to let her go with him. And she went, and they found themselves in a community that was unfamiliar to him, and they stayed at a man's house. And that night, in the middle of the night, some men came to the gate, pounding on the gate, saying they wanted to know that foreigner, that man. And he gave his concubine and the owner's daughter to them, and they were raped all night long and left for dead at the threshold. The last words of that passage say, take heart in the woman and speak out. Take heart in the woman and speak out. The word courage comes from the root word heart. Have courage. Speak out. Tell these stories. That's why I'm here talking to you today. That's why I encourage you, if you know of some relational violence, that you talk to me or that you call the hotlines that are on the back of the bathroom doors, that you take heart in people's stories who are being abused and you speak out. There are echoes of Queen Vashti's great no reverberating all through the Bible. Vashti may be nothing but a prologue to the book of Esther in the church's eyes for all that we hear about her. But in the Bible, she lives on in the minds of her people, the king, and most importantly, Queen Esther herself. This is a story for every person who has ever felt her integrity called into question, who has ever had to weigh the risk between his job and his self-respect, who has ever had to stand up in the face of an unjust situation and say, no, I cannot, I will not go along with this. I wonder what would happen if we put the story of Vashti back into circulation. Would our children have a role model for saying no to adults who try to touch them inappropriately? Would our daughters muster a little more courage to say no to a boyfriend who keeps pressuring her to have sex when she doesn't want to? Would it give our sons and daughters the courage to say no to bullying? Would it give you and me a place to begin talking about the hundreds of awkward, troubling moments in our lives when we feel like we are being asked to do something that puts our integrity at risk? The boss tells us to hide money in a fake expense account, or a friend at a party tells us that he or she is embezzling money, or that they're selling drugs, or a family member assumes that we'll keep silent about their addiction that's tearing our family apart. Things can and do happen every day that challenge our integrity. What do we do? Do we just say no? It isn't easy, and there's great cost, but the rewards are life and soul saving. We don't have many role models for saying no, especially in the Bible. It's true that Jesus put his foot down on several occasions, but we tend to think of our Christian faith in terms of saying yes to God, to Christ, to love, to the law. Maybe what we need to hear is that an equally important part of our life as Christians is in finding the courage and the encouragement to say no when we need to, not because it's the easy thing to do, but because it's the right thing to do. Vashti does not save the day with her great no. In fact, in the eyes of the world, she loses. They take away her crown, her position, her prestige, her good name, her life, probably. In the eyes of the world, when Vashti says no, she gets herself exiled, and she inspires harsh laws against other women. But in the eyes of God, her action is something different. Vashti's courage inspires the next woman and the next and the next. Her great no becomes Esther's great no, so the Jews in the empire are not systematically murdered. Vashti's example encourages women and men to speak up for themselves. Her no resounds throughout history because the word, that is, God with us, will not, cannot be silenced. When the word gets out, when more of us say no, no, we will not participate in our own oppression. No, we will not stand for violence. No, we will not be objectified or objectify another. No, we will take our bodies and minds and souls back from the devil. When word gets out, the world will change for the better. Amen.